50. "What is he doing here?" Flores asks, aiming his weapon at Langdon just as I start to lower mine.
"It's not me," Langdon says. "I'm not him."
I push Flores's weapon down.
"It's my Langdon."
"Why are you here?" Cassie asks. None of us trust him, in part because of who he becomes in the future, but also because his presence here is a little too convenient. The last thing any of us want is to run away from a killer giant and into a tunnel full of synergy security guards ready to gun us down. By bringing Suokalu to Langdon's doorstep, we've officially declared war on him.
"My elder self, he fetched me a few hours ago, wanted me to watch what was happening, wanted to gloat. He's quite vindictive."
"I've noticed," I say, "but what does he have against you?"
"I couldn't save her," he says, "or wasn't willing to do what was required to save her."
"All this is really for your wife?" Cassie asks. As indignant as she sounds, I can't help but wonder how far I would go to save her, or my father. What would I have given to have him back? I've already proven I would risk a temporal paradox, and despite the fact that he's supposed to die tomorrow, I have killed and would kill again to keep him alive. But would I risk generations of Black Creek residents and defile all of space and time? Not a chance.
"They kept me in a security center of sorts," Langdon says, "where they pilot the drones from, and
I've seen it," I tell him.
"When that thing arrived, they all became very agitated and distracted. I saw you on the security feeds and knew this entrance was nearby."
"You broke free?" Levi asks, sounding doubtful.
"I'm not a man of action, not like any of you. I wasn't bound. Given the state of things when I left, I wouldn't be surprised if they failed to notice I was missing. You have to believe me, I'm here to help. That man, that me, has my wife, not his, and I fail to see how his actions will save her and not kill us all."
A drone tank, miniguns still spinning and firing, sails past overhead before crashing into a tree and exploding. After ducking and raising his arm for cover, Levi says,
"I'm gonna trust him,"
and starts climbing down into the tunnel.
When he says, "All clear,"
from below, I motion for the others to head down. Owen goes first, followed by Cassie. My father and Enola have taken up a kind of perimeter, weapons raised toward the sounds of battle.
"Dad, let's go."
He motions for Enola to move, and she does, descending quickly, followed by Flores, who doesn't need to be told twice. My father stands, backing up toward the tunnel entrance. When he stops short, I say,
"You first."
"Can't blame a father for trying."
"It's not your job to protect me," I tell him. "Not anymore."
"Sorry about not being there for you," he says. "If I'd known, you'd have still run in believing you could help," I tell him. "I was angry at you for it, but I've always been proud of you, too."
"Well," he says, turning toward the hatch,
"you're doing a better job than I."
Trees shatter. Bullets slice through the forest. Tracers arc toward us.
"Get to—"
My warning is cut short by a beasting of pain in my thigh that drops me to the ground. Marine raiders are trained to assess the lethality and extent of an injury. The general rule of thumb is pain and the kind of pain. There are several types of agony that are not lethal, like a bullet through a bone. But when the body is wounded in a way that is catastrophic, it knows. The pain of approaching death can be felt in every cell. I've been lucky enough to never feel it, but I've experienced a large enough number of injuries to know the sting on my leg is most likely a graze. Anything more from a minigun 7.62 caliber bullet would be life-threatening, no matter where it hit. Especially during the Cretaceous. I don't even bother looking at it when I push myself up. When I turn back to the hatch and find my father still standing over it, I shout,
"Get down there, go!"
Then I spot the blood dripping from his slack hands. Time slows.
"Dad."
He turns to face me, eyes filled with sadness more than pain.
"No. God, please, no.
I'm sorry,"
he whispers, twisting as his legs give out, revealing a hole in his chest. I reach for him, but I'm too slow. My father falls back, toppling through the hatch. The sound of his dead weight striking the tunnel floor is followed by a moment of stunned silence, and then my 11-year-old scream. I leap down the hole, landing beside my father's still body, unaware of the pain the drop caused my knees and my open wound. I roll him onto his back, take stock of the wound, and through already blurring eyes, I know there is nothing I, or anyone else, can do.
My father is dead. Again.
Owen's familiar wail of agony stabs me in the heart. When I look up at the boy standing there staring at his dead father, I shout, "Get him out of here!"
Having my father die was the worst moment of my life, but I never had to go through the scarring turmoil of seeing his bloody corpse. Until now.
Cassie leads Owen away, holding him as he weeps into her shoulder. "God damn it," I say, on my knees, my forehead pressed to my father's.
Tears drip from my eyes, rolling over my father's face.
"God damn it, why didn't you go down? Why?"
Something in my heart and mind changes. Sadness and despair are walled off with the suddenness of a nuclear blast. When I look up at Langdon, he staggers back, tripping as his heels reach the tunnel's upward curve. I lunge, slamming him against the wall.
"Why?"
I scream.
"Why did he have to die again? What the fuck are you doing?"
"It's not me," the younger Langdon says, hands raised.
"I'm not him."
I'm oblivious to the quivering fear in his voice. All I can see is the face of the man I hold responsible for my father's death. In the past, I had no one to blame but my own father for trying to be a hero. Now all my anger is directed at the man who orchestrated this shit show, who fucked with my heart by giving me my father back and then took him away again. A hand on my shoulder acts as a trigger. I spin around, throwing a wild punch. Lucky for me and for Flores, he's got quick reflexes. My fist sails past his chin as he leans out of range.
"Hey!"
Levi shouts at me, redirecting my anger toward him. The moment he sees the look in my eyes, he backs away.
"I know you're beyond pissed," Flores says. "I can't begin to imagine what you're feeling. But right now you're a soldier with a mission, and that man isn't your enemy. Stow it for later."
I understand what he's telling me. I've heard it before. Hell, I've given similar speeches to men under my command. But this is my father. My dead father reborn, returned to me, and now dead again.
"Fuck you,
Owen," Cassie says. It's the tone of her voice that catches my attention. Unlike Levi and Flores, she doesn't sound angry or on edge. She's just sad, full of understanding. I know if I look at her, I'll come apart. But then I hear him, the gentle whimper of a broken child. The last time I dealt with this moment, I was at home, in bed, crying into my pillow, my grandfather rubbing my back. Owen is in a dark tunnel, surrounded by monsters from the past, a madman from the future, and the closest thing he could ever have to a brother or a father, himself. The hardness clutching my chest cracks when I see Cassie, her face wet with tears. She loved my father too, and I know she loves me. She knows what this moment means to both of her Owens. My legs shake when I walk to her. I nearly fall over when I go down to one knee. "Oh," I say, using the nickname I always liked, but no one ever used. His already bloodshot, red-rimmed eyes peek out from Cassie's chest. I reach out my arms and he spills into them, his deep, resonating wail returning. My chest heaves once, then again. And then there is nothing I can do to stop myself from joining him. Despite the difference in pitch, our cry is the same. Our pain is the same. And our anger is the same. He leans back and through his tears says,
"There needs to be a reckoning for this."
He sounds like a McCoy. He sounds like me. I give him a firm nod. "There will be." We wipe our tears away in unison, and I can see his own heart hardening along with mine. As much as it hurts to see myself so young and full of rage, I also know it will sustain him until this nightmare journey is over. We can cry again when that happens. Until then, we have a reckoning to see to. I stand and hold out my arms to Owen. He hops up, allowing me to hold him like a smaller child, his arms around my neck, his legs wrapped around my waist. When I turn to the younger Langdon, his eyes are damp. I glance at Flores, Levi, and Enola and see the same. These are good people. They don't deserve my anger. I'll save it for the man and the monster who do.
"I will stay with him," Enola says.
As sad as she looks, I sense that this is nothing new for her. She is accustomed to her people being killed and is already moving past her grief.
I will protect him until he can be laid to rest.
Thank you, I tell her. She gives a solemn nod. Now, I say, turning to the younger Langdon, my fury returning. Take me to him.